And welcome to Believe in Celtics, brought to you by Bet Online. I'm your host, Warren Shaw, and alongside me, you know who it is. It's the great Gary Washburn. Gary, what's good, family? How you feeling?
Good, good. It was a fun opener in terms of just seeing the NBA back. I know it's always good to see the NBA come back, and it was a exciting night at the Garden. You know, the Bill Russell tribute was very appropriate. It was wonderful. And, you know, Celtics always seem to do those things first class. I mean, when you have so many legends, and nowadays, unfortunately, Warren, a lot of them are passing away. I think like the last 5 or 6 years has been really hard on the organization, losing Russell, Havlicek, Heinsohn, Casey Jones, Sam Jones, like a lot of those. I mean, just believe it or not, you know, 6, 7 years ago, a lot of those legends were still around and walking, and you could shake their hand or have a conversation with them. And now, you know, a lot of those guys are gone just like that. So it was a good night in terms of the tribute, the game, and I think it's a good kickoff to the season.
Yeah, I think that's very well said, G. Honestly, you know, watching it from my viewpoint and hearing, I think Jaylen Brown was the one who was mic'd up on the TNT broadcast and just saying, you know, like, hey, let's get it for Bill. Let's get it for Bill. And that was, you know, really important. And I think I enjoyed into kind of the NBA's overall mantra and spirit of they know what Bill Russell meant and means to the league itself, too. So I think the ceremony was very well done. Let's just dive into that a little bit more before we obviously get into the crux of the show here. Just, you know, talk to me a little bit about the ambiance within the arena, you know, that feeling. And, you know, did the players really kind of take it as something that, yeah, we needed to win this for Bill, so to speak? It just, you know, to kind of keep that, kind of keep his mantra of winning alive, if you will, and really just try to set the right tone for the beginning of the season.
You know, Warren, I think it's really interesting that, you know, people might say, okay, you know, Russell, for a lot of these guys old enough to be there, probably in some cases, their great grandfather, right? He was 88 years old. Some of these guys are 25. Like, so their knowledge of him on those old grainy videos or seeing the number six retired is there. But the thing that differentiates Russell from other aging guys, you know, that probably are less out of the spotlight. Russell was around almost until he passed. Like, he went to a Celtics game literally last December when they played the Nets. You know, he visited practice at times. He would say hello. Like, they got to actually meet him. I don't know about long. I think he was more familiar with, like, the big three of Garnett and Pearson. He was around more then. He was a little bit more nimble in his you know, like mid-70s, he was still pretty active guy. And once he got to his 80s, obviously, and then COVID happened. And that really, as you know, Warren, screwed a lot of things up and slowed a lot of people down, unfortunately, and a lot of older people. He wasn't able to get around as much with travel. He was very cautious about that. But those guys on that team all mostly got to meet him, at least, right? Like, he was there. He was talking to them. He knew the game, you know. He was at that, you remember that infamous NBA awards where he gave Barkley the finger, you know, like 3 years ago, right? So this was not 10, 12 years ago. This was, I think, 2019. I think the last one they had, and they gave, you know, so these guys are all familiar with him. And they got, even, you know, if they didn't get to, like, have, you know, close, long conversations with him, they at least got to meet him, shake their hand. They knew that they shared the history of the Celtics, you know, like, this is the Celtic here. This is the guy that, you know, is the reason that you're wearing green. This is the man here. So I think that made it a little different. So it made it a little bit more emotional for the players, as opposed to a guy who was, you know, wasn't around, but just happened to unfortunately pass away, who hadn't been invisible. Russell was a visible guy. I think the celebration was really heartfelt, because I think, you know, he died during the offseason. He died July 31st. It's the first time for a lot of the fans that they were back in the arena. And then the six logo, it looks great on television, by the way, Warren. You know, if you're the other side, it looks like it's number 9. It's like a Rajon Rondo tribute or something like that, a Derek White tribute. But for TV purposes, it looks great. When you see the six in the middle of the floor. So I think the people were really, it was really heartfelt, you know, because it was, it, you know, and his wife was there. And I think that was a big deal too. His wife, his widow was there. And I just think people wanted to just honor him or whatever. You know, my personal thing, like my personal experience with Mr. Russell, I only interviewed him once. I saw him several times at Celtic games and at the finals when he's presenting the Bill Russell Award. You know, people are like, well, do you have a Bill Russell story? And actually, I do. I was covering the 2010 finals, Celtics-Lakers, before game one, you know, media day. And we're at Staples. And so there's Bill Russell, and he's just milling around by himself. And I go, Mr. Russell, do you have a minute? And he looks me up and down, and where are you from? I go to Boston Globe. And what I didn't know, Warren, was that I guess, you know, Russell didn't talk to the Globe for like 35 years. Like he was not happy with the coverage of the team and the black athletes and understandably maybe in Boston in the 1960s. So he had not been quoted in the Globe for 30 plus years. And so he looks me up and down and goes, you got 3 minutes. So I was like, okay. And, you know, I didn't waste any time, Warren. I got to work and came out with a story. What does he think of the Lakers and the Celtics and the rivalry? You know, stuff that you would ask Bill Russell or whatever. And I just thought it was a real thrill to talk to him. And I'm glad. I don't know if I'm sure he might have had pity for me, but he gave me 3 minutes. He looked me up and down, saw my credentials, and said, you got 3 minutes. And I maybe saw a young reporter of color, black reporter, and said, you know, okay, I'm going to give you a break this time. The thing about Russell is I think that the one thing the Celtics do, and I'm sure other organizations do, is they bring their old players back. You know, they've had countless reunions and dinners where you get to actually know these guys and the fans still get to know these guys and they still get to go out on the court and get a standing O. Like Robert Parrish was there last year. Parrish hadn't been to the Garden for whatever various issues or whatever for a while. He gets a standing O. I think that's how you treat your legends. And so I think the Bill Russell celebration was apropos, and it was, you know, the Celtics always do those things first class. So I think that was a great way to kick off the season and a great way to start the game.
Yeah, definitely agree. And I think it translated and you know, it hit the marks. And again, it just needed to do what it needed to do. It didn't feel like just something that was antiquated or checking boxes per se. It felt right. So I'm glad that I was able to take place and that the ambiance and in the arena was, you know, special and very much heartfelt, as you alluded to. So great stuff here from the guy, Gary Washburn. So obviously we got to do our plugs before we get to the crux of the show. As always, make sure you're following us here on Believe in Celtics. Make sure you're following at Believe Sports on all your social media platforms. Follow my man G Wash at G Washburn Globe, or follow me at Shaw Sports NBA. And again, Believe Network or Believe Sports on Twitter. All right, we'll be right back here after this quick break here. You got to hear from our friends over at Bet Online, and we'll be back with the Geno Time segment of Believe in Celtics. Football is back, and Bet Online remains your number one source for all your football betting needs this season. You'll find the latest odds, matchup info, player news, and game trends. And as your continued source for all sports wagering info, BetOnline features live betting, free contests, live scores, and giveaways all season long. Always the fastest and easiest way to bet all your favorite sports and events like MLB, MMA, tennis, boxing, and even golf. Head to betonline.ag to join and receive your 100% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Make sure to use promo code BELIEVE to receive your rewards. That's BLEAV, BELIEVE, BetOnline, where the game starts. And on this week's edition of Geno Time, T. Wash here and Warren Shaw, we're going to discuss the first game here. Boston defeats the Philadelphia 76ers in game one, opening night for the NBA. Really, the first game of the season, so you kind of love to see it and see Team Green get featured in that way. Final score 126-117 in a game that was pretty closely contested. Celtics kind of took control of that game in the third quarter. And some questions and conversations that could be had about this, but, you know, big things we want to highlight, obviously Tatum and Brown doubling up at 35 points per each, you know, and that Malcolm Brogdon playing great basketball off the bench, Grant Williams playing great basketball off the bench. And we saw Noah Vonleh very early because of some foul trouble as well, too. So I'll have to kind of dive into, and we won't get into every single nuance, because even by the time we record and do this, they'll be playing another game and there'll be other things to discuss. But Gary, from your viewpoint, just one of the things I want to discuss for sure is they played with pace. And in the preseason, we discussed, you know, their issues with turnovers. Only 10 turnovers in this game, very much kind of what you had said. Hey, you want to keep that thing in the 10 to 15-ish range. They were able to do that. But really, pace. And they outscored the Sixers, who obviously have Joel Embiid, outscored them in the paint and outscored them on fast break points. Just talk to me a little bit about what you saw and what some of the coaches and players said after the game, you know, kind of regarding those three things.
Well, Warren, I thought that it was an interesting game because, you know, Philadelphia kind of like Celtics jumped out to a 9-2 lead, and it looked like, oh boy, this could be not a blowout because obviously the games are an eternity, but you saw the good energy there. But then Philadelphia came back, and Harden was Houston Harden. I mean, he was getting to the free throw line, splashing threes. He was doing his thing, and you thought, okay, wow, Philadelphia is probably a lot better than people are giving him credit for, and this is going to be a struggle throughout once Embiid gets going. But two things happened. One, Embiid never really got going. Like, Embiid was solid, but he wasn't like 40-20 Embiid. You know, you're looking – Embiid has had some big old games against the Celtics over the years. I've watched him just dominate whoever they have against him, and I think – The consensus was, well, when he gets going and then Harden gets going, and then it was kind of typical Philly too there, Warren. Like Tobias Harris, a guy that I just think has immense skills. I mean, he scores 12 points early, and I think he finished with 14 or 16. Like, you know, he didn't finish up. Like, the Celtics took the first punch, trailing by five in the first quarter, tied it up at halftime, and then third quarter imposed their will, scoring on their defense, picking up the pace, scoring on the breaks, getting Tatum 17 points in that third quarter. And then Jalen takes over 13 in the fourth. Like, they took turns. And it's just like the star power, the balance. I felt the defense started kicking in, causing turnovers. I was impressed, Warren, with their play against Embiid. Embiid, they let him go one-on-one for a minute. Then here comes the second defender to help, to strip him, cause that turnover, make it difficult for him because they didn't trust any of the other Philly shooters besides Harden. The one thing, when you don't have that splash, you know, you don't have that Seth Curry or J.J. Redick, like, you swing the ball around, it's like, okay, well, who's going to take this shot? So I thought the Celtics just kind of took the first blow, initial blow, came back, imposed their will, and then pulled away and showed who was the better team at this point in the season. Now, Philly, I think, is going to be a solid club, you know, when they get all their pieces kind of fitting together. And I didn't think it was a terrible performance by Philadelphia, but I thought I'd see more from Embiid. Harden, 35 points, looked like, okay, he's a tad bit better than he was last year in Philly. But I thought the Celtics overall, their second half response, holding on in the fourth quarter, like the game got, you know, they didn't give up a lead. They didn't. That was important. I was like, okay, they're up 10 in the fourth quarter, in the fourth. And as you know, Warren, a 10-point lead in an NBA game is nothing. That's two threes, and you're down, suddenly down four. Yep. So that is a point differential that can be made up very, very quickly. So if you're the Celtics and you got these jitters from the Warriors last year and some of these games that happened, are they going to hold on to this lead? Are they going to build on it? Or are they going to fight to the finish and win by two or have it to where, you know, a last second shot? Like, how are they going to deal with this fourth quarter prosperity? And they dealt with it. They built on the lead. I think Philly scored the last 6 points in like the last, you know, 50 seconds to kind of, because I think it was a 16-point lead or 15-point lead, and they won by 9. So the score is a little deceiving, but I thought the Celtics built on that lead, did what they needed to do, got out there with a win. And without Robert Williams and with, you know, some early foul trouble.
Yeah, the foul trouble was the thing that I was concerned about, you know, watching the game early on. Obviously, fouling 3 3-pointers, I think, in the first quarter, you know, that was, you know, something that was, again, it's a faux pas, you know, defensively, but really kind of hammered things down moving forward into the game. And it's funny because you look at Joel's numbers, you know, still had 26, 15 rebounds, 5 assists, shot 9 of 18 from the floor, you know, over 50%. So still had, in quote unquote, a good game. But again, when you're looking at it from Boston's standpoint, you know, they did kind of limit him, and they made him give it up, you know, at times as well too. And they're definitely doing a great job, I think, stunting at him when necessary, doubling when necessary, or playing him one-on-one at times as well too. And that's kind of where I want to take, you know, the crux of this conversation now as well, because, right, Boston played well. We saw some great things from Brown and Tatum. But I think where people are probably a little bit concerned is that front court rotation. So we saw Noah Vonleh come in early on. Horford got 2 fouls early, and then Noah comes in. They kind of let Noah out there and said, all right, well, be what it may be, you know, so to speak.
Yeah, they had to throw him out there. They didn't have much options, yeah.
Yeah, and then Blake Griffin saw some time out there as well, too. You know, the big, and Grant Williams obviously doing what he needed to do. But I was really impressed, I think, with their poise and overcoming the what they probably perceived was a difficult whistle early on. Talk to me a little bit more about kind of that front court depth, and, you know what I mean, is it just a pride thing now, you know, with these guys where they know that Robert's not going to be back for quite some time here, and they just realize, hey, they're going to have to do this by committee, and they're all just kind of willing to step up.
Yeah, that's the thing too, Warren. I mean, with Al Horford, you know, you don't want to run him too much into the ground because he's 36 years old, although he's playing with a lot, still playing with a lot of energy, still in great shape. You don't want to run him out there too long for 38 to 40 minutes. So guys like Vonleh and Griffin are going to be important. The thing that I noticed, though, Warren, was, like, we heard all offseason about Luke Kornet. Luke Kornet's going to have a role in this team. Luke Kornet is going to be potentially a starting center or even a backup center. He did not play in game one. Now, I know he's coming off an ankle injury or whatever. He didn't play much, if at all, the preseason. But that was a kind of a telltale sign with the lack of bigs that they had. They didn't throw him out there for 8 to 10 minutes to get some run, and they just at least commit a foul or two, or get a, you know, or fill some space to give guys a breather. Because Vonleh, I think, finished with 5 fouls. Blake Griffin was out there, so I think the thing to look out for is what happens with Kornet. Does Mazzulla trust him? Is he going to be a guy with a role, or is it a situation where maybe Mazzulla didn't like what he saw in training camp in terms of his fit and said, okay, well, we're going to go to Griffin, we're going to go to Vonleh, because Vonleh fought to make the team. Kornet's spot was already kind of guaranteed, right? So I thought it was interesting that Vonleh was the first guy he went to, and so we'll see what happens. Maybe the ankle isn't, you know, we were told, oh, he's healthy, he's available, but he didn't play. So I think that's an interesting dynamic to look out for, Warren, is what they do with Kornet. And then there was no Peyton Pritchard. We didn't see him. Does that change? You know, and he told us today at practice, hey, well, we're still building these lineups, we're figuring things out, and things are fluid. I get all that. This is a big game. You got foul trouble. You're developing your rotations. You know, Sam Hauser didn't play that much. You know, we thought we'd see him for good extended periods of time, right? He was kind of in there at the end of quarters or here and there, but he didn't get a lot of run either. So the thing to look out for over the next couple of weeks is who plays and who doesn't. But I thought last night, Warren, the front court kind of worked itself out. Vonleh ended up making some good plays. He played some good defense. He didn't put up the eye-popping numbers. He didn't have 12 rebounds or anything like that. But I thought, hey, fill in, provide resistance at the rim, use your strength. He's strong as an ox. So, and I think that's what he did. And obviously, if you're, you know, now they got Bam Adebayo on Friday, you know, but they're not going to be facing Embiid every night. So this is a challenge. I think that they were relieved that they were able to get through. They only got three more matchups with Embiid before the playoffs. So I think they understand that every team is not going to unleash a 7'2", 275-pound guy who can dominate in the paint and shoot from the perimeter. I think the Celtics feel like they did pretty good there.
Yeah, I think those are great points, and it's a possibility in some ways. We're speculating here that, you know, with that, if Cornette is not 100%, Embiid is probably not the guy you want to go out here and test your chops against. You know what I mean? You want to maybe ease into that a little bit as well. And obviously, Vonleh was ready for that challenge. And I was just really surprised. He played 20 minutes. He was literally the first guy off the Celtics bench, and not that he's going to be sixth man of the year or anything like that. It's just by virtue of Horford having those that early foul trouble, you know. But I was still impressed, I think, with what I saw from him kind of in general. You know, Grant Williams, though, you know, 5 for 5 from the floor, you know, hit 3 threes as well. You know, showing off a little bit of his escapability, you know what I mean, on the move. So that is translating into the preseason and even on the telecast. And obviously, you know, you were there live, but a lot of conversation like, yo, Grant Williams is a legit NBA player. He's a legit, you know, defensive basketball player. He's a legit offensive threat from the 3-point line. Kind of stepping a little bit away from the game per se and going into Grant Williams' specific situation. You know, how is he taking the fact that he didn't get a deal done? You know, a lot of other guys out there got paid and got paid pretty handsomely. Yeah, you know, he's a professional. But, you know, is he a little salty about this? And, you know, any kind of bitterness that you think we'll see throughout the course of the year?
Yeah, it's tough, Warren, because you don't know what the numbers are being bandied about. But, you know, if you look at some of the other numbers, DeAndre Hunter got like $20 million. And I know Grant's looking at that and saying, wait a minute. I've done more than DeAndre Hunter in this league. Yeah. And I know Brandon Clark from Memphis got about $45 million. You know, people were kind of saying, okay, Grant's ballpark should be, you know, 4 years, maybe 48 or 4 years. Now, did Grant ask for 4 and 70? And the Celtics were like, no, we'll give you 4 and 50. But I think this is a prove it year for Grant Williams. And I think he knows, talking to people who know him, he understands he's betting on himself, you know. He's betting that he can take that major step forward to make this decision hard on the Celtics. Like, hey, you got to bring me back or you got to pay. And who knows? There'll be teams with salary cap. If Grant turns himself into a really, really good player this year, and he's merging, he's improved, right? He had a solid rookie year. His second year was kind of bumpy. Last year, he lost a little weight, took a real big step forward. This fourth year now, if he takes that major step, there are teams that are going to bid on him. You know, they're going to make that offer sheet. There's going to teams of cap space that are going to promise him maybe a bigger role, a chance to start, things like that. So I think the Celtics are kind of rolling the dice here. But I also understand, as you know, Warren, I mean, this is a game of money. This is a business game. This is a game of numbers. Like, you got Robert Williams on an extension. You have Jalen coming up in 2 years, Smart, Derek White, Brogdon, all are signed for the next couple of years. And then Jason, you know, in a couple of years, Jason can opt out. And the Celtics understand that it's going to take $50+ million per season to keep that man in green. Like, they know that. Everybody knows that it's going to be the most obvious thing when his contract comes up. He is not going to take $37 million his final year. He will be opting out, okay? So they know they got to get Jalen paid and Jason paid to keep both those guys happy. We'll see what happens with Marcus. We'll see what happens with Derek White and then Brogdon. But I think the Celtics, like, do we want to commit another $12, $13 million per year for 4 years for Grant, or just take our chances? And we might be able, in some senses, to replace him with a younger player with a cheaper salary. You know, I think that's finances talking, Warren. And so if I'm the Celtics, you know, you're taking a chance, you're motivating them. If I'm Grant, I think mentally you start making plans and opening your mind up to maybe playing somewhere else in the near future, because it could come down to that.
That's real talk, you know, and I think what we're seeing from Grant, I mean, obviously it's only one game, but I think he's come out focused. He's definitely added to his overall game, and we'll see if that can continue throughout the course of the regular season and obviously hopefully into the playoffs as well. But I think he is a valuable piece, it's a really interesting situation because, you know, I'm never to try to put limit on somebody's, you know, what they think they're going to be able to do. I think he's in a perfect role right now for Boston. And if that role were to have to expand for the Celtics or anybody else, I don't know what level of efficiency he would be, but I'm sure he's confident that he'd be able to do everything that was asked of him, you know, at whatever number and then whatever capacity. But this is an interesting test case, you know, and hopefully Boston is not necessarily playing with fire here. But again, great start for him. Despite the contract situation, I really was really impressed with how he opened up the season. We won't go too much longer here, too. I just want to get one more quick thought here. Just, you know, Malcolm Brogdon, you know, 16 points, four assists off the bench, 7-11 from the floor, even missed a bunny. So you probably should have had, you know, made 8-11, that left-handed layup on the drive.
Yeah.
But he looked really good. I think the ability to take some pressure, you know, off of Tatum and Brown and play alongside with them, be another scoring threat, but even to create at times as well. Continuing what we saw in the preseason, just what do you make of his case potentially? And obviously, you're there with the team on a regular basis. Does he care about winning an award? Does he want to be Sixth Man of the Year, or is it really just about just trying to get these dubs and play basketball at the highest level?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I think he's one of those guys that, hey, if I'm gonna be a Sixth Man, I want to be the best at it, right? I want to get that award now. I don't think that's something – it might be a goal, but I don't think it's something he's, you know, bucking for right now. I think he wants to be comfortable in the offense. He wants his role. He wants minutes, which I think he got. And he wants a chance to score. Like, he had 16 points. It's not like, well, you know, I didn't get my shots off. He got three shots. He got 11 shots, as you said. I mean, he made the most of his minutes. He was a good defensive player out there. And the thing that I think is underrated – having seen him over the years, he can get to the rim, and he's got that, you know, either with either hand, that ability to just get to the rim against bigs and just lay it in. You know, that's a lost art, right? Where everybody wants to dunk and things like that. You know, Marcus doesn't really have that. Marcus kind of backs you in and takes a little lefty hook or righty hook or whatever. Marcus is crafty around the rim, where Brogdon can dive to the basket with his strength and maybe a little bit more quickness, and then get to his spot to lay the ball off the backboard before it gets blocked off, you know, before it gets blocked. And I think he had one of those blocked last night, maybe one or whatever. But to me, like, I was just thoroughly impressed with how he flows into the game. He's a professional. You know, you need pros in this league, man. You know, not everybody's a pro. A lot of these guys are pro ball players, but none of them are pros in terms of what is my job. Let me do that job, and then everything will take care of itself. I'm not the star of the team. There's going to be days that I score 25. There's going to be days I score 8. You know, and I get 5 shots, but hey, I had a couple of key steals or a rebound, or I played shutdown defense in the fourth quarter. So I think that's what Brogdon's about. I think he's about trying to win. I think he understands this situation. I think he just wants to win. So I think he's willing to do whatever it takes. But I do think he'll play good enough on a nightly basis, Warren, to earn definitely his share of minutes.
Yeah, I definitely agree with Aaron. You know, on one of my other shows, we were having the conversation because the Sixth Man of the Year award tends to just go to somebody who scores the most coming off the bench. I think Brogdon is going to do so much more than score, obviously playing good defense and facilitating. And I'd love to see that be rewarded. You know what I mean? As opposed to just, hey, I'm a bucket getter. I score 18, 20 points per game. You know, even if he's at 12 to 14 a game, but, you know, 4 or 5 assists off the bench, that's valuable, especially for what he's doing, I think, on both ends of the floor, as you alluded to.
Yes, sir. So
before we close out, you know, again, obviously we've kind of buried the lead. And I feel like in a couple of shows that we've done together, we've touched and hinted around, you know, Tatum and Brown, because we want to highlight the majority of the roster. Yeah. But we'd be remiss. They were friggin' masterful against the Philadelphia. They were so good and efficient on both sides. And you talked a little bit about that earlier. But is there anything specific you see where you feel like that can really be how they function, kind of playing off of each other like that at that level of efficiency? Because that's the thing that I'm most, I think, surprised and impressed by in this first game. Just 14 of 24 for Jalen, 13 of 20, you know, for Jason. That's ridiculous efficiency in shooting. You know, what kind of led to that? Were they just hot, or do you feel like they were getting just really good looks in the flow of the offense that Mazzulla was drawing up?
Yeah, I thought it was good looks there, Warren. I thought that both of them showed like Jason, you know, like the funny part about this is both of them took the preseason a little bit differently. Jalen played like his hair was on fire. Jalen played pissed. He played like he had a point to prove in the preseason. Jason kind of was chilling. Yeah, like, you didn't see a lot. You didn't see the best of Jalen. You saw some flashes in that final game against Toronto. But Jason, you didn't look at Jason and go, wow, he's really ready for this season. Look at that. Oh, what is – ooh. Like, then suddenly in the opener, you know, he's flashing the mid-range. He's getting to the rim. He's hitting the three. Like, he just looked like he was completely locked in and engaged. Like he said from day one, from game one, I'm taking over this league. And I think that the good thing about it is, obviously, they get along well on the floor. They get along well off the floor. They want each other to succeed. And I think they both know how important each other they are to each other and each other are to them for the success of the team. They know I can't do this alone. He can't do this alone. I think that's what I think is important. So if I'm a Celtic fan, I think it's a great sign that both of them got off, especially Jalen. You know, Jason, I think you know he's going to drop the ball, put the ball in the hoop. Jalen, you want him to be comfortable too and have his time where he can take over the game too. And one of them took over the third quarter, and then Jalen finishes off in the fourth quarter. And both of them finished with 35. I mean, if you couldn't draw it up any better. If you're going to have 70 points between your two stars, 35 and 35 is how you want it. Because you don't know who to guard now, right? Who do you focus on? You put everything on Jalen? Well, okay. He might burn you. You put everything on Jason, you know, he's going to get his too. So I think it was a great sign that both of them went off in the opening game, you know, division rival against, obviously a team that's seen them a lot. This is not a team that's bad. This isn't, you know, this is a team that knows them. And for them to be able to just handle things, handle their business, I think that's a great sign for the Celtic faithful.
Absolutely, 100% agree. So hopefully we'll see great things throughout for Jason and Jalen throughout the course of the season. Grant Williams continuing with his hot shooting. Noah Vonleh coming off the bench and giving them great minutes in that front court. Maybe intertwining Blake a little bit. And we'll also see if we get Luke Kornet on the floor here, right, you know, post that ankle injury. So, great first game for the Boston Celtics. Gary, as always, your coverage is, you know, A+, you know, number one. Nobody better out there doing it, you know, when it comes to the Boston Celtics. And, you know, that's going to do it here for our first in-season, regular season edition of Believe in Celtics. We'll definitely be back next week conversating on the Miami game, the Orlando game, Chicago, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Everything that's going to happen in between there as well, and seeing if they can continue this great start. I want to thank everybody for tuning in to Believe in Celtics, brought to you by Bet Online. He is Gary Washburn. Make sure you're following him again at G Washburn Globe. Follow me at Shaw Sports NBA. And that'll do it. We'll catch y'all next week. Believe in Celtics. Peace.